Igor was sitting in the huge kitchen, a bandage round his head. Lady Sybil was fussing over him.
"I went to look for him a couple of hours ago, and there he was, flat on the snow," she said.
She leaned closer to Vimes.
"He doesn't remember very much."
"Can you recall what you were doing, old chap?" said Vimes, sitting down. Igor gave him a bleary look.
"Well, sir, I went out to unpack the foodstuffs from the other coach, and I'd just got hold of something, and then all the lights went out, sir. I reckon I must have slipped."
"Or someone hit you?" Igor shrugged. For a moment, both of his shoulders were at the same level.
"There's nothing on the coach worth stealing," said Lady Sybil.
"Not unless someone was dying for a knuckle sandwich," said Vimes. "Was anything taken?"
"I checked everything against the list her ladyship gave me, sir," said Detritus, meeting Vimes's gaze. "There wasn't anything missing, sir."
"I'll just go and take a look for myself," said Vimes. When they were outside, he walked over to the coach and looked at the snow around it. The cobbles were visible here and there. Then he looked up at the grating. "All right, Detritus," he said. "Talk to me."
"Just a feeling, sir," rumbled the troll. "I know Fick is my middle name."
"I didn't know you had a first name, Sergeant."
"I don't think this was one of them accidents that happens by accident."
"He might have fallen off the coach when he was unloading it," said Vimes.
"And I might be the fairy Clinker Bell, sir."
Vimes was impressed. This was low-temperature thinking from Detritus.
"The street doors is open," said Detritus. "I reckon Igor disturbed someone who was pinching stuff."
"But you said nothing was missing."
"Maybe the thief took fright, sir."
"What? At seeing Igor? Could be." Vimes looked at the bags and boxes. Then he looked again. Things had been thrown down any old how. That wasn't how you unpacked a coach, unless you were looking for something in a real hurry. Who'd go to these lengths to steal food? "Nothing was missing," he rubbed his chin. "Who packed the coach, Detritus?"
"Dunno, sir. I think her ladyship just ordered a lot of stuff."
"And we left in a bit of a rush, too." Vimes stopped. Best to leave it there. He had an idea, but, well, where was the evidence? You could say nothing that should have been there was missing. So what must have been taken was something that shouldn't have been there. No. For now, it was just something to remember. They walked into the hall, and Vimes's eye fell on a pile of cards on a table by the door.
"There's been a lot of visitors," said Detritus.
Vimes took a handful of cards. Some of them had gold edging.
"Dem diplomatics all want you to come for drinky-poos and stories about chickens," the troll added helpfully.
"Cocktails, I think you'll find," said Vimes, reading through the pasteboards. Clatch, Muntab, Genua, Lanka. Lanka? It's a kingdom you could spit across. They've got an embassy here."
"No, sir. Mostly they've got a letterbox."
"Will we all fit in?"
"They've rented a house for the coronation, sir."
Vimes dropped the invitations back onto the table. "I don't think I can face any of this stuff," he said. "A man can only drink so much fruit juice and listen to so many bad jokes. Where's the nearest Clax Tower, Detritus?"
"About 15 miles hubwards, sir."
"I'd like to find out what's going on back home. I think that this afternoon, Lady Sybil and I will have a nice quiet ride in the country. It will take her mind off things." Then he thought, "I'll wait until midnight, see? And it's still only lunchtime." In the end, Vimes took Igor as driver and guide, and the guards Tantony and the one he would forever think of as Colonescu. Skimmer still hadn't returned from whatever nefarious expedition was occupying his time, and Vimes was damned if he'd leave the embassy unguarded. Yet another word for diplomat, Vimes mused, was spy. The only difference was that the host government knew who you were. The game was to outwit them, presumably. The sun was warm, the breeze was cold, the mountain air made every peak look as if Vimes could reach out and touch it. Outside the town, snow-covered vineyards and farms clung to slopes that in Ankh-Morpork would be called walls, but after a while the pine forests closed in. Here and there, at a curve in the road, the river was visible far below. Up on the box, Igor was crooning a lament.
"He told me Igor's heal very fast," said Lady Sybil.
"They'd have to."
"Mr. Skimmer said they're very gifted surgeons, Sam."
"Except cosmetically, perhaps." The coach slowed. "Do you come up here a lot, Igor?" said Vimes.
Mr. Sleeps used to have me drive over once a week to collect messages, Master.
I'd have thought it'd be easier to have a pick-up tower in Bonk.
The council ordered against it, sir.
And you?
I am very modern in my outlook, sir.
The tower loomed quite close now. The first 20 feet or so were of stone with narrow barred windows. Then there was a broad platform from which the main tower grew. It was a sensible arrangement. An enemy would find it hard to break in or set fire to it. There was enough storage room inside to see out a siege, and the enemy would be aware that the lads inside would have signalled for help 30 seconds after the attack began. The company had money. They were like coaching agents in that respect. If a tower went out of action, someone would be along to ask expensive questions. There was no law here. The kind of people who'd turn up would be inclined to leave a message to the world that towers were not to be touched. Everyone should know this, and therefore it was odd to see that the big signal arms were stationary. The hairs rose on Vimes's neck. "Stay in the carriage, Sybil," he said.
"Is there something wrong?"
"I'm not sure," said Vimes, who was sure.
He stepped down and nodded to Igor.
"I'm going to have a look inside," he said.
"If there is any trouble, you're to get Lady Sybil back to the embassy, all right?"
Vimes leaned back into the coach and, trying not to look at Sybil, lifted up one of the seats and pulled out the sword he had hidden there.
"Sam," she said accusingly.
"Sorry, dear. I thought I ought to carry a spare."
There was a bell pull by the door of the tower. Vimes tugged at it and heard a clang somewhere above. When nothing else happened, he tried the door. It swung open.
"Hello?"
There was silence.
"This is the what—"
Vimes stopped. It wasn't the watch, was it? It's not out here. The badge didn't work. He was just an inquisitive, trespassing bastard.
"Anyone there?"
The room was piled high with sacks, boxes, and barrels. A wooden stairway led up to the next floor. Vimes climbed up into a combined bedroom and mess room. There were only two bunks, their covers pulled back. A chair was on the floor. A meal was on the table, knife and fork laid down carefully. On the stove, something had boiled dry in an iron pot. Vimes opened the firebox door, and there was a woomph as the inrushing air rekindled the charred wood. And, from above, the chink of metal. He looked at the ladder and the trapdoor to the next floor. Anyone climbing it would be presenting their head at a convenient height for a blade or boot.
"Tricky, isn't it, Your Grace?" said someone above him. "You'd better come up." "Inigo?" "It's safe enough, Your Grace. There's only me here."
"That counts as safe, does it?"
Vimes climbed the ladder. Inigo was sitting at a table, leafing through a stack of papers.
"Where's the crew?"
"That, Your Grace," said Inigo, "is one of the mysteries."
"And the others are?"
Inigo nodded towards the steps leading upwards.
"See for yourself."
The controls for the arms had been comprehensively smashed. Laths and bits of wire dangled forlornly from their complex framework.
"Several hours of repair work for skilled men, I'd say," said Inigo, as Vimes returned.
"What happened here, Inigo?"
"I would say the men who lived here were forced to leave in some disorder."
"But it's a fortified tower."
"And so?"
"They have to cut firewood."
"Oh, the company has rules, and then they put three young men in some lonely tower for weeks at a time, and they expect them to act like clockwork people. See the trapdoor up to the controls? That should be locked at all times. Now you, Your Grace, and myself as well, because we are
"Bastards?" Vimes supplied.
"Well, yes. We'd have devised a system that meant the clacks couldn't even be operated unless the trapdoor was shut, wouldn't we?"
"Something like that, yes."
"And we'd have written into the rules that the presence of any visitor in the tower would be automatically transmitted to the neighbouring towers, too."
"Probably. That'd be a start."
"As it is, I suspect that any harmless-looking visitor with a nice fresh apple pie for the lads would be warmly welcomed," sighed Inigo. "They do 2 month shifts, nothing to look at but trees."
"No blood? Not much sign of a struggle," said Vimes. "Have you checked outside?"
"There should be a horse in the stable. It's gone. We're more or less on rock here. There's wolf tracks, but there's wolf tracks everywhere around here. And the wind's blown the snow. They've gone, Your Grace."
"Are you sure the men let someone in through the door?" Vimes said.
anyone who could land on the platform could be in one of these windows in an instant.
A vampire?
It's a thought, isn't it?
There's no blood around.
It's a shame to waste good food, said Vimes. Think of those poor starving children in Muntab. What are these?
He pulled a box from under the lower bunk. Inside it were several tubes about a foot long, open at one end.
Badger and normal, ankh, more pork, he read aloud. Mortar flare, red. Light fuse, do not place in mouth.
It's a firework, Mr. Skimmer. I've seen them on ships.
Ah, there was something. Inigo leafed through the book on the table. They could send up an emergency flare if there was a big problem. Yes, the tower nearest Ankh Morpork will send out a couple of men, and a bigger squad comes up from the depot down on the plains. They take a downed tower very seriously.
Yeah, well, it could cost them money, said Vimes, peering into the mouth of the mortar.
We need this tower working, Inigo. I don't like being stuck out here.
The roads aren't too bad yet. They could be here by tomorrow evening. I'm sure you shouldn't do that, sir.
Vimes had pulled the mortar out of its tube. He looked at Inigo quizzically.
They won't go off until you light the charge at the base, he said. They're safe.
And they'd make a stupid weapon, because you can't aim them worth a damn, and they're only made of cardboard in any case. Come on, let's get it onto the roof.
Not until dark, Your Grace. That way, two or three towers on each side will see it, not just the closest.
But if the closest towers are watching, they'll certainly see...
We don't know that there is anyone there to watch, sir. Perhaps what happened here has happened there, too.
Good grief! You don't think...
No, I don't think, sir. I'm a civil servant. I advise other people. Then they think. My advice is that an hour or two won't hurt, sir. My advice is you should return with Lady Sybil now, sir. I will send up a flare as soon as it's dark and make my way back to the embassy.
Hold on. I am commander in...
Not here, Your Grace, remember? Here you are a civilian in the way. I'll be safe enough.
The crew weren't.
They weren't me. For the sake of Lady Sybil, Your Grace, I advise you to leave now.
Vimes hesitated, hating the fact that Inigo was not only right, but was, despite his claim to mindlessness, doing the thinking that he should be doing. He was supposed to be out for an afternoon's drive with his wife, for heaven's sake.
Well, all right. Just one thing, though. Why are you here?
The last time Sleeps was seen, he was on his way up here with a message.
Ah, and am I right in thinking that your Mr. Sleeps was not exactly the kind of diplomat that hands round the cucumber sandwiches?
Inigo smiled thinly. That's right, sir. He was the other sort.
Your sort.
And now go, Your Grace. The sun will be setting soon.
Corporal Nobbs, president and convener of the Guild of Watchmen, surveyed his troops.
All right, one more time, he said. What do we want?
The strike meeting had been going on for some time, and it had been going on in a bar. The watchmen were already a little forgetful. Constable Ping raised his hand.
A proper grievance procedure, a complaints committee, an overhaul of the promotion procedures,
Better crockery in the canteen, someone supplied.
Freedom from unwarranted accusations of sucrose theft, said someone else.
No more than 7 days straight on nights.
An increase in the boots allowance.
At least 3 afternoons off for grandmother's funerals per year.
Not having to pay for our own pigeon feed.
Another drink.
This last demand met with general approval. Constable Shu got to his feet. He was still, in his spare time, organiser of the Campaign for Dead Rights, and he knew how this sort of thing went.
No, 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 he said. You've got to get it a lot simpler than that. It's got to have bounce and rhythm. Like, what do we want? Dumpty-dumpty. When do we want it now? See? You need one simple demand. Let's try it again. What do we want?
The watchmen looked at one another. No one quite wanted to be the first.
Another drink?
Someone volunteered.
Yeah,
said someone at the back.
When do we want it? Now.
Well, that one seems to have worked, said Nobby as the policeman crowded round the bar. What else are we going to need, Reg?
Signs for the picket, said Constable Shu.
We've got to picket.
Oh, yes.
"In that case," said Nobby firmly, "we've got to have a big metal drum to burn old scrap wood in while we're picking at it."
"Why?" said Reg.
"You got to stand around warming your hands over a big drum," said Nobby. "That's how people know you're an official picket and not a bunch of bums."
"But we are a bunch of bums, Nobby. People think we are anyway."
"All right, but let's be warm ones."
The sun was a finger's width above the rim when Vimes's coach set off from the tower. Igor whipped the horses up. Vimes looked out the window at the road's edge a few feet away and several hundred feet above the water.
"Why so fast?" he shouted.
"Got to be home by sunset," Igor shouted. "It's traditional."
The big red sun was moving through bars of cloud.
"Oh, let him, dear, if it gives the poor soul pleasure," said Lady Sybil, shutting the window. "Now, Sam, what happened at the tower?"
"I don't really want to worry you, Sybil."
"Well, now that you've got me really worried, you may as well tell me, all right?"
Vimes gave in and explained the little that he knew.
"Someone's killed them?"
"Possibly."
"The same people that ambushed us back at that gorge?"
"I don't think so."
"This isn't turning out to be much of a holiday, Sam."
"It's being unable to do anything that makes me sick," said Vimes. "Bag in hand, more pork."
"Well, I'd have leads, contacts, some kind of map. Everyone here is, well, hiding something, I think. The new king thinks I'm a fool. The werewolves treated me as if I was something the cat dragged in. The only person who's been halfway civil was a vampire."
"Not the cat," said Sybil.
"What?" said Vimes, mystified.
"Werewolves hate cats," said Sybil. "I distinctly remember that. Definitely not cat people."
"Ha! No, dog people. They don't like words like bath or vet either. I reckon if you threw a stick at the Baron, he'd leap out of his chair to catch it."
"I suppose I ought to tell you about the carpets," said Sybil as the coach rocked around a corner.
"What, isn't he house-trained?"
"I meant the carpets in the embassy. You know I said I'd measure up for them. Well, the measurements aren't right on the first floor."
"I don't want to sound impatient, dear, but is this a carpet moment?"
"Sam?"
"Yes, dear?"
"Just stop thinking like a husband and start listening like a copper, will you?"
Vimes marched into the embassy and summoned Detritus and Cheery.
"You two are coming with us to the ball tonight," he said. "It'll be posh. Have you got anything to wear apart from your uniform, Sergeant?"
"No, sir."
"Well, go and see Igor. There's a good man with a needle if I ever saw one. How about you, Cheery?"
"Oh, I do have a gown," said Cheery, looking down shyly.
"You do?"
"Yes, sir."
"Oh, well, good. I'm putting the two of you on the embassy staff, too. Cheery, you're military attaché."
"Oh,"
said Detritus, disappointed.
"And Detritus, you're cultural attaché."
The troll brightened up considerably.
"You will not regret this, sir."
"I'm sure I won't," said Vimes. "Right now, I'd like you to come with me."
"Is this a cultural matter, sir?"
"Broadly, perhaps."
Vimes led the troll and Sybil up the stairs and into the office, where he stopped in front of a wall.
"This one?" he said.
"Yes," said his wife. "It's hard to notice until you measure the rooms, but that wall really is rather thick."
Vimes ran his hands along the panelling, looking for anything that might go click. Then he stood back.
"Give me a crossbow, Sergeant."
"Here we are, sir."
Vimes staggered under its weight, but managed to get it pointed at the wall.
"Is this wise, Sam?" said Sybil.
Vimes stood back to take aim, and the floorboard moved under his heel. A panel in the wall swung gently.
"You scared the hell out of it, sir," said Detritus loyally.
Vimes carefully handed the crossbow back and tried to look as though he'd meant things to happen this way. He'd expected a secret passage, but this was a tiny workroom. There were jars on shelves labelled New Suet Strata, Area 21, Grade A Fat, The Big Hole. There were lumps of crumbling rock, with neat cardboard tags attached to them saying things like Level 3 Shaft 9 Double Pick Mine. There was a set of drawers. One of them was full of makeup, including a selection of moustaches. Wordlessly, Vimes opened one of a stack of notebooks. The first pages had a pencil-drawn street map of Bjonk, with red lines threading through it. "Good grief, look at this," he breathed, flicking onwards. "Maps? Drawings? There's pages of stuff about the assaying of fat deposits. Ha! It says here, 'The new suets, while initially promising,
are now suspected of having high levels of BCBs and are likely to be soon exhausted. And here it says, a werewolf putsch is clearly planned in the chaos following the loss of the Scone. K reports that many of the younger werewolves now follow W, who has changed the nature of the game. This stuff is spying. I wonder how Veterinari all seem to know so much. Did you think it came to him in dreams, dear? But there's loads of details here. Notes about people, lots of figures about dwarf mining production, political rumours. I didn't know he did this sort of thing. You use spies all the time, dear, said Sybil. I do not. Well, what about people like Foul Old Ron and No Way Jose and Cumbling Michael? That is not spying. That is not spying. That's just information received. We couldn't do the job if we didn't know what's happening on the street. Well, perhaps Havelock just thinks in terms of a bigger street, dear. There's loads more of this muck. Look, sketches, more bits of ore. What the hell's this? It was oblong and about the size of a cigarette packet. There was a round glass disc on one face and a couple of levers on one side. Vimes pushed one of them. A tiny hatch opened, and the smallest head he'd ever seen that could speak said, Yes.
I know dat, said Detritus. Dat's a nano-imp. Dey cost over $100. They're really small.
They was bloody fed me for a fortnight, the imp squeaked.
It's an iconograph small enough to fit in a pocket, said Vimes. Something for a spy. It's as bad as Inigo's damn one-shot crossbow. And look! Steps led downwards. He took them carefully and swung open the little door at the end. Wet heat slapped into him. "Pass me down a candle, will you, dear?" he said, and by its light he looked out into a long, dank tunnel. Crusted pipes, leaking steam at every joint, lined the far wall. "A way in and out where no one will see him, too," he said. "What a dirty world we live in!" The clouds had covered the sky and the wind was whipping thick snowflakes around the tower when Inigo finished setting up the red mortar on the platform below the big square shutters. He lit a couple of matches, but the wind streamed them out before he could even cup his hands around them. Damn! He slid down the ladder and into the warmth of the tower. It'd be better to spend the night here, he thought, as he rummaged in the drawers. The nights didn't hold many terrors for him, but this storm had the feel of another big snow, and the mountain roads would soon be treacherous. Finally, an idea struck him, and he opened the door of the stove and pulled out a smouldering log with the tongs. It burst into flame when he carried it out at the top of the tower, and he directed it into the touch hole at the base of the tube. The mortar fired with a pht that was lost in the wind. The flare itself tumbled invisibly up into the snow, and then a few seconds later exploded 100 feet overhead, casting a brief red glare over the forests. Inigo had just got back into the room when there was a knock at the door down on the ground. He paused. There was a window and hatch at this level. The designers of the tower had at least known it would be a good idea to be able to look down and see who was a-knocking. There was no one there. When he'd climbed back into the room, the knock came again. He hadn't locked the door after Vimes went. A bit late to regret that now, he realised. But Inigo Skimmer had trained in an academy that made the School of Hard Knocks look like a sandpit. He lit a candle and crept down the ladder in the darkness, shadows fleeing and dancing amongst the stacks of provisions. With the candle set down on a box, he pulled the one-shot crossbow from inside his coat and, with an effort, cocked it against the wall. Then he flexed his left arm and felt the palm dagger ease itself into position. He clicked his heels in a certain way and sensed the tiny blade slide out from the toes, and Inigo settled down to wait. Behind him, something blew the candle out. As he turned, and the crossbow's one bolt whirred into darkness, and the palm dagger scythed at nothing, it occurred to Inigo Skimmer that you could knock on either side of a door. They really were very clever. Cheery twirled, or at least attempted to. It was not a movement that came naturally to dwarfs.
You look very nice, said Lady Sybil. It goes all the way to the grind, too. I don't think anyone could possibly complain.
Unless they were remotely fashion-conscious, she had to admit. The problem was that the
Well, she had to think of them as the new dwarf women, hadn't quite settled on a look. Lady Sybil herself usually wore ball gowns of a light blue, a colour often chosen by ladies of a certain age and girth to combine the maximum of quiet style with the minimum of visibility. But dwarf girls had heard about sequins. They seemed to have decided in their bones that if they were going to overturn thousands of years of subterranean tradition, they weren't going to go through all that for no damned twinset and pearls.
"And red is good," said Lady Sybil sincerely. "Red is a very nice colour. It's a nice red dress. And the feathers. The bag to carry your axe. Not glittery enough," said Cherry. No. If I was going to carry a large axe on my back to a diplomatic function, I think I'd want it glittery too. It is such a very large axe, of course," she finished lamely. "You think perhaps a smaller one might be better for evening wear?" "That would be a start, yes. Perhaps with a few rubies set in the handle?" "Yes," said Lady Sybil weakly. "Why not, after all?"
"What about me, Ladyship?" Detritus rumbled.
Igor had certainly risen to the occasion, applying to a number of suits found in the embassy wardrobes the same pioneering surgical skills that he used on unfortunate loggers and other people who may have strayed too close to a bandsaw. It had taken him just 90 minutes to construct something around Detritus. It was definitely evening dress. You couldn't get away with it in daylight. The troll looked like a wall with a bow tie.
"How does it all feel?" said Lady Sybil, playing for safety.
"It are rather tight around, what's this bit called?"
"I really have no idea," said Lady Sybil.
"It makes me lurch a bit," said Detritus, "but I feel very diplomatic."
"Not the crossbow, however," said Lady Sybil.
"She got her axe," said Detritus accusingly.
"Dwarf axes are accepted as a cultural weapon," said Lady Sybil. "I don't know the etiquette here, but I suppose you could get away with a club."
"After all," she added to herself, "it's not as though anyone would try and take it off you."
"The crossbow ain't cultural."
"I'm afraid not."
"I could put, glitter on it."
"Not enough, I'm afraid. Oh, Sam."
"Yes, dear," said Vimes, coming down the stairs.
"That's just your watch dress uniform. What about your ducal regalia?"
"Can't find it anywhere," said Vimes innocently. "I think the bag must have fallen off the coach in the past here. But I've got a helmet with feathers in it, and Igor's buffed up the breastplate until he could see his face in it, though I'm not sure why."
He quailed at her expression.
"Duke is a military term, dear. No soldier would ever go to war in tights. Not if he thought he might be taken prisoner."
"I find this highly suspicious, Sam."
"Detritus will back me up on this," said Vimes.
"That's right, sir," the troll rumbled. "You distinctly said to say that—"
"Anyway, we better be going—" "Good grief, is that Cheery?"
"Yes, sir,"
said Cheery nervously. "Well," thought Vimes, "she comes from a family where people go off in strange clothes to face explosions far away from the sun."
"Very nice," he said.
Lamps were lit all along the tunnel to what Vimes had come to think of as downtown Bjonk. Dwarf guards waved the coach through after a mere glance at the Ankh-Morpork crest. The ones around the giant elevator were more uncertain, but Sam Vimes had learned a lot from watching Lady Sybil. She didn't mean to act like that, but she'd been born to it, into a class that had always behaved this way. You went through the world as if there was no possibility that anyone would stop you or question you, and most of the time that's exactly what didn't happen. There were others in the elevator as it rumbled downwards. Mostly they were diplomats that Vimes didn't recognise, but there was also, now, in a roped-off corner, a quartet of dwarf musicians playing pleasant yet slightly annoying music that ate its way into Vimes's head as the interminable descent went on. When the doors opened, he heard Sybil gasp.
"I thought you said it was like a starry night down here, Sam."
They've certainly turned the wick up."
Candles by the thousand burned in brackets all around the walls of the huge cavern, but it was the chandeliers that caught the eye. There were scores of them, each at least 4 stories high. Vimes, always ready to look for the wires behind the smoke and mirrors, made out the dwarfs working inside the gantries and the baskets of fresh candles being lowered through holes in the ceiling. If the fifth elephant wasn't a myth, At least one whole toe must be being burned tonight.
Thank you.